We run the desert podcast.
I like that.
We run the desert podcast. We run the desert.
Guys, it's We Run the Desert.
Yeah, that's perfect. All right.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of We Run the Desert. I'm Chris.
And I'm Eve.
And today we are sitting down, no guests, just Eve and I catching up on our last conversation, what's been going on with Eve and myself. So hopefully you guys enjoy us just chatting with each other and catching up.
Yeah, we have a lot to catch up on because if you remember the last episode that we were both on, we were talking about how to prepare for races a little undercooked. And it was the day before Black Canyon.
Yeah, I think so.
And a month before Crown King, which Chris was training for, and I was training for Black Canyon. If you have not followed this on my social media, I did not finish Black Canyon. It was a crazy race with cold and a 2.5 hour delayed start, none of which is why I didn't finish. I mean, the cold kind of. So, yeah, I didn't finish. We can talk about that a little more. Chris, you...
I didn't even start
cramping. Yeah.
I think these are good because if people are ever out there like dealing with DNFs, DNS, mm-hmm. like whatever happens, whether it's life stuff, medical stuff, like it happens to everyone. It happens to all of us.
It happens to everyone and it happens not infrequently.
Yeah, same. Seems like more and more for sure. Yeah.
My gosh. I actually went back and counted up in a moment of despair. If I have more official DNFs or finishes at the ultra level, like not including the years of running sub ultras, and not including self-supported ultras, of which I have, I don't know, probably 10 more. And it was like 15 finishes and 10 DNFs. It's a really high number of DNFs for me at this point and like 3 in a row. So,
but those metrics are interesting too, because I feel like or a lot of people, myself included, will start diving into those metrics and like our brains are kind of like, well, if you're feeling bad about yourself, oh, how many DNFs do I have? And then you start looking at the ratio for finishes like you're doing. But also I remember a time when I was like, my goal is to never DNF a race. And then you get that first one and you're like, well, that's over. And it's like, yeah.
I know. Then and so, yeah, it's a really interesting perspective. Is it failure because I've got like a 40% DNF rate, or is it success because I've got a 60% finish race and I've obviously been pushing myself?
And is it less pressure? Like, as like, I guess,
I don't know.
It could go both ways.
It could go both ways. And it depends on, for me, it depends a lot on whether I'm viewing it from the lens of an athlete or a coach, because they're two different lenses and they are not the same results on how I view my own running. So,
but you're not just an athlete. You're also a coach. You're also a parent. You're also, you know what I mean? Like there's more to us than just the race and the athlete perspective. So I think a lot of times what's helped me long-term is, okay, I might be down on myself for DNFing or not starting this race, but like, I was a really good dad this week, or I did really good in my job, like just trying to find the positive in other aspects of our lives.
That's a really good point. And I think, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, actually, with that, like what happens if I can't run again, or I can't race again, how does that look for me? And one of my athletes is a therapist, like a psychotherapist, the real deal. And he and I were talking one time about how you need to have tethers, and running can be a tether to keep you grounded, but it's not the only tether. So you have to have other tethers in case running gets snipped. And I've been trying to think really hard to make sure that since both my job and my hobby and actually a lot of my socializing are all tied up in running, if I'm not running or racing, what else do I have in place that can hold? So
So that conversation came up recently on an episode with Maggie and Nolan and I experienced something similar to this too, where when you get injured, maybe it's the first time you get injured and you're like, my life's over. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my time anymore. I remember like doing puzzles. Like, what the fuck am I doing? I haven't done a puzzle.
Dude, I love puzzles. Right. So don't clown on puzzles. Puzzles are great.
But like to your point, it's for you, it's not just your hobby or you're also tied to it with coaching, the community. So everything surrounding you has to do with running. So what do you do when you're like introspectively thinking about maybe this is something I need to like look at other things. Mm-hmm. Like, not that you're not going to run or be involved, but
yeah, it's tough. And I mentally had prepared to step back my running like this year, several years ago when I started coaching and I was doing like a 5-year plan. I meant to, as my business potentially took off, shift into a role of coaching and shift back my running and train list. So I'm there now and that's what I want. And I'm happy with all of that, but it still feels weird. And it particularly feels weird to, I think this is very ultra specific, but it will translate to like road and lesser distances too. I think I'm really wrestling with the idea of giving up the Western States qualifier and what chasing that specifically has done to my health in the past year, and how I like have set maybe a bad example for some of my own athletes in doing that, which I thought I wasn't, but I'm looking back now and I think I was. So it's really, really multifaceted. And I feel like even as listeners are listening to this, you can hear I don't sound like upbeat and peppy about this. I'm not crying yet, but I probably will. But it's just, it's complex. And it's, the relationship with running is complex for everyone, not just people who coach, not just ultra runners, but yeah. So lots of things that I'm revising.
As a coach too, it's got to be difficult when you're like, okay, what's best for me right now is to take a step back, focus on coaching. Mm-hmm. And then you have all these athletes, you're still involved in the community, you see them doing well, and it kind of gives you that drive. And you're like, oh man, like I want to do that for myself. So it's hard to balance that, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is hard to balance. So for the first month after Black Canyon, my health was bad enough. Like, you know, I had multiple organ failure happening for the third time in six or seven months.
Oh, okay.
6 or 7 months, because every time I've had heat stroke, it pushes me into a little bit of organ failure, an amount of organ failure. And this time my heart really took some time to bounce back from that and took some time to get the meds. So I was really physically suppressed and mentally foggy. So I couldn't really think about running. I was struggling just to be able to focus on my athletes' races. But now that I'm feeling better, my meds are adjusted and I'm back to running. I don't know. No, the athlete stuff, I think I'm still solidly living through them and I'm not missing racing yet, but it's not, I don't know, it's pushing my own running.
Does it seem like some small form of like identity crisis maybe? Because I've definitely felt like that before when everything surrounding you has to do with running and then you're not running. It's kind of like, who am I now?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's not the first time I've gone through this. So maybe I'm pretty confident me and running will get through this. Like, we've gotten through a lot of stuff in the past 30 years, 31 years. So I think running and I will be okay. But the idea of not racing, and then what does that mean to me? And what does that mean to others who look at me if I'm not racing, if I'm not
as a coach
putting up results as a coach? Because I will tell you that 90% of people look to coaches' performance before anything else, even though coaches who are performing well may or may not be good coaches. They may or may not have any history as coaches. They may or may not have a lot of life experience to coach athletes who have multifaceted lives and aren't elite runners. But it's definitely the thing that puts, it's my biggest, easiest marketing thing. Now, I've stepped back from racing in the past year anyway, and so I've been able to see that my coaching can stand alone, but it's harder. It's a lot harder for me. It's harder to advertise. It's harder to stay in the inner circle of things. But that was going to happen anyway, because I'm 45 and I can't keep doing all the same stuff. And I'm happy for the next generation to come up. Right now, the next generation of ladies that are a decade younger than me, some of them are people I have low-key mentored or coach or just been friends with, like, yeah, Megan Kupres and Alyssa and Sierra from, and Maya from Las Vegas, and they are just crushing things, and it's awesome to see. And I'm really happy to see the next generation come up, and my own athletes, a lot of them.
I think it can be both.
I'm just rambling on.
No. That's fine. I think it can be both. I think you can be happy for the next generation, right, but also like,
but I'm
like, crave what it was for you 10 years ago.
But I'm not sure that I'm craving that, actually. Like, I think I'm okay with coaching more and running less. But still giving up the idea of not qualifying for Western states is really hard for me.
It's specifically Western states.
Western states, which is crazy because I don't have like a huge burning desire to run that course beyond what it represents. I've run parts of that course before. We can get out there and run. It's not that far from here.
Yeah, but it's something you've been chasing for a while.
The idea of it, and I put so much time into chasing it, and I put my health at risk to chase it. And now to say, well, I know that's a little hard. I didn't realize how caught up I was in that until I thought about a second year of not qualifying, because I took a bye year last year, which you get. And I think if I don't qualify this calendar year, all my tickets are lost, I believe. So I have to start over. It's okay. Like it's also not the end of the world, you know? Like,
yeah. Maybe a way to think about that too, is like reframing it into a different goal, right? Yeah. Like maybe that's been your goal and it's something that was the A goal. And now maybe it's mm-hmm. just a matter of finding a new A goal. And like, yeah. then at least you have something to work towards.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I've never really identified as a 100-miler, and there are very few 100-milers left in the United States that I have like a burning desire to do. There's one that I have some desire to do beyond Western states, and the others are like, yeah, they sound great, but the idea of running all night and possibly vomiting or pooping all night, like, dude, I'm getting old. I don't like to be cold. I don't want to be hot. I don't want to have to puke and rally like 400 times. Like, I don't know. So yeah. Revisiting goals, coming back, like maybe I get back to 50 milers and do another one of those. Maybe I spend some time in the canyon. I don't know.
Have you thought about two things? Racing on the back burner and then just like running or adventuring without races for like a while.
Yeah. So I plan to give myself through the summer. And I think this is where our episode's going to go from here, like beyond our stream of consciousness. I need to give myself a really long runway, like 6 months without having any incidents happen with any cold weather or hot weather or any extremes. I just need to get through at least 6 months, which means I have to get through the summer here, which means I can't do anything too crazy because the summer here is already its own huge giant stressor that I didn't make it through last summer. So I can't really think about any big goals until September, until I've made it through some stuff. So I have some small goals. I maybe Moog 42K in September, if I get there with zero heat issues from now to then.
Have you run into issues outside of races, like on long runs?
No. And all of my training blocks between first heat stroke and towing the line at Cuyamaca, and then again between Cuyamaca and Black Canyon, I was putting in 60 mile weeks or more. I was putting in the adequate amount of vert. I was doing the adequate training, but it was on a compressed timeline within a 3 month window. There were 3 months between first heat stroke and Cuyamaca and Black Canyon. And I think that's just, it's enough to get my fitness there, but it wasn't enough to let my body's internal barometer reset. When you have heat exhaustion, your body sets your shutdown point lower. Same true with hypothermia. The body sets that trigger to shut down to protect your organs lower. So I've reset mine 3 times in the past year. So it's very low. I've got exactly 5 minutes, it seems, to get from heat stress or hypothermia to fix it, or I'm on the floor, can't move, vomiting. That's what happened at Black Canyon. 5 minutes. Jeff watched it happen that fast. Colleen watched it happen that fast.
There's no middle ground.
There's no middle ground because my body has reset. It's a safety measure. It's there to keep me alive. It's done a good job.
Yeah.
But can you imagine like getting through the summer with 5 minutes to resolve heat issues? That's not a lot of time. So I have to be really, really careful this summer. If I can do that, then I can think about racing again. And then I can think about doing self-supported things. I really want to go run in the canyon. It's not safe to do right now. I'm a huge liability and I just fought a huge helicopter medical bill. So I don't want to go through that again in the canyon.
Yeah.
Oh,
especially in the canyon.
I don't want to pace anyone right now. I won't be pacing at Cocodona this year because I'm a liability, especially going up and down Eldon. And I don't want my runner to think about
worry about you.
Yeah. You know, like, is my coach going to be too cold and whatever? That's not their problem. So I'd like to be back into pacing shape and adventuring shape by the fall. I'd like to be healthy for winter racing, maybe. There's a couple races.
Winter racing.
There's three
nice.
Races that all have 50-mile distances. The first weekend of December that I've been eyeing two of them for a while. Same weekend as Frenzy. Frenzy's one of the three. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And then the second point to that question is, what about starting from scratch with distance and instead of thinking about the next 50 miler or 100K?
That's what I'm doing. And I have to give a shout out to one of my friends who's not super active on Instagram, Jason, vegan ultra runner. I don't even think he listens to this podcast, but he's an amazing runner, really, really speedy guy. And over this past year, he did this very slow back to basics rebuild over like 6 to 8 months where it was incremental, like a couple miles a week, no extrovert, really, really controlling so that the only variable he was building was distance. And it was such a control slow build. It's really impressive. It's such discipline to be able to do that. So I'm trying to do something like that. Although I'm really struggling with keeping the vert down because, you know, to go see the wildflowers, I have to get some vert. Yeah. But yeah, I am trying to really keep things very slow build and really very slow. I think I hit like 28 miles last week. That was a big week, or 25. I don't even know. And then I have to plateau myself around 40 miles. I'm just going to hang out there. No super long runs this summer. Probably nothing more than 3 hours.
If you're used to spending your time, let's say on a Saturday or whatever day it is, and you're like, hey, I'm going to be out there for 4 hours, 20 plus miles, and that's what you're used to, and you're starting to put yourself through this rebuild phase, and now your Saturday long run is not even a long run anymore.
It's an hour.
What are you doing with the rest of that time? I think that's the what in my head, like if I'm thinking about myself going through this, it's the what do I do with the rest of my time in my day where I'm used to being outside running?
So that's where it goes back to what I was first saying. I'm trying to build up some other habits, some other hobbies. I've been reading a lot more. I'm also 45, so I'm wearing bifocals now. And it occurs to me that I need another hobby that's not reliant upon eyesight because at some point that will go away in my hearing. And it, anyway, no, but I've been leaning into my lesser hobbies that are like cooking. I baked a crap ton for my kids this weekend because I had the energy to stand in the kitchen for 2 hours, 3 days in a row, which I can't remember the last time that my long runs didn't like impact that.
Yeah. Cooking's been
and
fun for me too.
Yeah. So just building up hobbies that, I maintained, but shifted down. Yeah.
And I bring that up because I haven't trained and actually raced for something since summer of 2022. So almost 2 years. And I'm still trying to find what my identity is outside of running.
It's
so
hard.
Like it's when you spend so much time and dedicate so much time and resources to running and not just running, but like the community and for you coaching, where do you go when it goes away or when you have to dial it down? Like, it's important to be able to have that backup plan and find those hobbies.
I think it's important to maintain some hobbies and some ties outside of the community. Something that doesn't involve being outdoors, something that doesn't involve the same social circle. And it doesn't have to be something that you lean in hard to all of the time. You can do maintenance on a hobby a few times a year, and still maintain some acclimation to it. But I just think it's really important for anybody not to be so consumed by whatever it is.
Anything. Yeah, anything. Not just running, but anything. Yeah.
In terms of not running, for me, like I think for the past 2 years, I've leaned into paddleboarding because I can be outside and do it. And it ticks a lot of the same boxes as running, but doesn't rely on me using my legs. So I was doing that last spring when I broke a toe, and other times when I haven't been able to like go out and run, doing that. And it's hard in a different way and fun. And I feel really lucky to have another outdoor hobby that's not just hiking or running.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's also really humbling to be not good at something and to always be mildly scared. Like paddleboarding is still outside of my comfort zone.
I still barely stand up on a paddleboard without falling over.
Yeah, I'm good with the balance. But like this last time we went, we forgot to check the water levels and Salt River wasn't actually flowing. So it was like, it was not good. And I was so beat up after my knees were all banged up. And
yeah, I saw your post. You were like walking through the
top of my foot from kneeling down on my board. It hurt to run for 3 days after. So, you know, yeah.
Injured from paddleboarding.
Yeah, injured from paddleboarding for sure. But I think having like even just non-running outdoor things are nice too, if you have that.
I think it's still important to have some sort of like physical activity. Yeah. I've tried to go with three like key pillars for my day. Like every day I got to tick the physical box, the mental box, and then like the health, like the nutrition box, so to speak. So like, as long as I'm eating somewhat healthy, allow myself room for treats here and there, balance. And then doing something for my mental, whether it's reading or meditating, and then also something physical. And physical could be like go outside and play with your kids. Like it doesn't have to be go for whatever amount of run or hike or whatever. It could just be something outside and physical.
Exactly.
And I feel like that's brought me to more of like a balanced thing where they're attainable goals. And then I can work myself back up to 100K or whatever the long-term goal is.
Yeah. I think really starting small and, keeping like you just said, things attainable is really, really good. Are you doing a lot of strength training still?
Yes. A shit ton of strength training. But again, like it's not going to benefit me to work out more than one, you know what I mean? Like there's a line where it's like, okay, this is too much. I got to do something else, especially with lifting. I mean, if I do more than 45 minutes, I'm done for the day. Whereas like I'm used to running a 20 plus mile day and it's like, okay, that's my whole day.
Yeah, I know it is kind of, you're really right about, this is the first time in a very long time that I've gone many, many, many weeks without a proper long run, like nothing even over 2 hours. And that is a lot of time to have back on the weekend, especially when I'm not always with my kids. So there's some weekends where I don't have a lot of obligations and that is...
And then you're just like, doo-doo-doo. Well, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel the same. And that's why what I fall into, which I got to be careful of, is I shift my time to other people. So like, when I have the kids, it's all about the kids or it's all about spending time with friends or, you know what I mean? Like I have to be careful that I don't put too much time into everyone else because then I neglect the time I need for myself.
Yeah.
But then when I have time for myself, I'm like, well, what the fuck do I do?
I know.
You know what I mean? Like that's what I need to work on personally.
Well, that's something I have actually enjoyed about, my runs being training free is I've been able to catch up with a lot of my athletes who run locally, like the past couple of weeks, especially now that I'm back to running kind of safely, 4 miles or more and not falling apart with soreness on the trail. Although I am very sore from yesterday's run. Like I was sore during it. I was sore after it. It was kind of humbling. Anyway, no, I've been, because they're not training runs, and I'm running less distance, like 4 miles instead of 8 on a Tuesday, for example. I'm meeting up with a lot more of my runners in Phoenix and Las Vegas. That's really nice.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as leaning into social time. It's an aspect of social and an aspect of work. But it's been really, it really helps keep me out of that I should be training mindset, which I think I and many people fall into habitually because it's been built into my life for so many years. So without that structure, there is a void. So
it's become routine.
Yeah.
And then when that routine goes away for whatever reason, it's like, well, fuck, what do I do now?
Yeah.
That's what I've fallen into. It's like, I got to find things to do to fill my time that are also close to being as fulfilling as what running does.
Yeah. So something that I talk about a lot with my runners who, especially those who are newer to ultras, well, I'm actually just newer to running in general, is this comes up a lot during taper and recovery when you're running less miles.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? And then you get all up in your head about things and or start comparing yourself. Or as you said, during injury, the same things that we're saying now are what I tell my runners. And I save house projects or like fancy baking for my kids for when I'm tapering or when I'm in recovery. And I know I won't have the running to fill things up. And I'm very glad that, like I said, that I've maintained some of those habits that I can lean into now to fill the routine. But also, my routine is now back in place. I'm running the days I normally run, which is really, really comforting. I'm just running less on those days.
Yeah.
And fewer, not just less miles, like less spicy runs, less interesting runs.
What do you mean by that? Less vert, less speed?
Less vert, less speed. Oh, yeah. For my first couple of weeks back, I was coming off of several weeks of not having enough oxygen, and I just, it was really slow, and it was like, whoa, what is this? it felt really different.
How do you manage doing that?
No speed, no heat exposure. Recently I was up in Vegas and it was about 10 degrees hotter than I thought it would be when I was out there. So I was going to go do the Muffins run, which was 2 miles longer than I had run before on trails since Black Canyon. And, you know, it's got a lot of vert in the middle. But because it was so hot, I had to say, I just did a bunch of outbacks on the flat parts because I couldn't also add the vert. So that's something I'm trying to do. And all of you who are rebuilding from injury or a step away from running, please keep this in mind. Don't try to increase too many variables at once. If you're building your mileage or your strength training, then don't also build the other thing. If you're building your mileage, let it level off a bit before you start building your heat acclimation or your trail legs, which is usually what we mean by being able to take vert or, you know, hard downhill. So finding some balance with that, keeping, when I'm jumping 6 to 10 miles a week in my build, I can't have anything else complex in there. No heat, no. That's why I'm hobbling today, because I didn't do last week. I did 2 extra miles from the week before, but like 1,000 more feet of vert, and my Achilles are barking today.
isn't that kind of like part of you? Like, this feels good to be sore. Like,
a little bit.
Almost like you earned the.
Yeah. I was really happy on Saturday to feel like tired enough to have a rest day rather than just taking a rest day because it was scheduled. I was like, oh yeah, I'm tired. This is going to be a good rest day.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I definitely need to do some mobility work today though. The ankles are a little stiff. I was landing really hard on the downhills, which is a sign of one aspect of lost fitness. I'm not as mobile. My proprioception is down. So those flying leaps I like to take over rocks, they feel hard coming down. And I was like, oh, my joints. So my musculoskeletal system needs to rebuild too.
You thought about biking?
I have actually.
Really?
Yeah. So in the summer, I plan to do more biking and a little more strength training. So I will plateau my mileage. I hope by June to be around 40 miles a week and then hold there through the summer, and I will increase biking indoors and increase my strength training, which I'm not really doing much of yet right now. So
now there's like a reason to. You sound so excited.
I'm not really looking forward to it, but biking's okay with an audiobook or
maybe you'll like whatever. Fall in love with it and you'll be like, oh man, I remember when I used to be a runner and now I'm just hardcore.
I've had to bike 2 different times for broken toes and I have never fallen in love with it. And that was like, I can't imagine when I'm more casually biking for training that no.
Have you thought about rock climbing at all?
I have thought about it.
That could be fun. I feel like that's something I always enjoy doing. And then I'm like,
I've never been.
I could like really get into this. And then I just never.
Yeah.
Just for like fun things to do on the side. I don't know. Like I said, I've spent probably close to 2 years figuring out what my identity was, not being the runner guy mm-hmm. or like that guy who runs ultras. And I'm still like finding new, like it just, mm-hmm. I don't know, it takes time. And there's things I still miss and enjoy about running. And even now when I get the opportunity, like this afternoon, I'm going to have maybe an hour where I can run and I'll have a window. And like, I'm looking forward to that. Just getting out on the trail and like whatever pace, whatever, just being back out there.
That will be nice. Especially if it rains on you.
There's nothing better than that. As long as the trails aren't too messed up.
They're not too bad. They were pretty dry yesterday. I went out right after the rain. So sorry, total sidebar for you guys. It's been raining in Phoenix. So, And I think it's important to remember with running, it's okay for your identity to shift and for running to take a less important place. That doesn't mean you're a lesser runner. Things ebb and flow. It's okay. I am seeing a lot of runners that I've been coaching for 3 or more years, some off and on and some continually going through I think I mentioned this last time we did this. I have several runners coming back after taking a couple years mm-hmm. off from ultra running, not from running, but from racing ultras.
Yeah.
Some who did like tries or did other like hiking only or other things, or just took a break altogether. And now they're ready to come back. They're feeling refreshed. I have some runners looking into the summer who are shifting down their race goals out of like 100K, 100 mile mindset, and they're going down to 50K or less. So I think just remembering that for all of us, allowing for change and allowing for your identity to shift and your relationship to with running to shift without sending you into crisis mode is important. Like, it's okay for things to change.
Yep.
And it's probably inevitable.
And I was going to say, Eve is also, as I'm sitting here talking to her, she's like, she's talking on the podcast, but she's also talking to herself. Like, I can tell. She's like, it's inevitable. Yeah.
No, I like really, like I said, this, I was going to be thinking about my relationship with racing and how coaching would shift with all of that at this time of life. Anyway, so it's, I don't know. It's midlife stuff.
Yeah, that's a great way.
Welcome to being middle age.
Yeah, that's like a great way to put it.
So I guess maybe that's what I'm saying, that all of you are going to go through a shift at some point, whether it's injury or another person takes you away because they have more needs, like a baby or an aging parent or a spouse or whatever, or, you know, anything. There's so many things that cause shifts, and that's okay. Know that they're going to happen. I wish I had better advice for like, it's easy to get through it. It's not, but it's also not the end of the world.
That's the key, is that we don't have to pretend that it's something that it's easy to go through and like an easy shift to make, but you're not alone, I guess is the only way I can put that.
Yeah. And I will say specifically to high mileage runners, the world doesn't end if you're running 25 or 30 miles a week. It really doesn't.
Or zero.
Or zero. But no, I think some of us get a little caught up in it's either high mileage or no mileage.
Yeah.
And there's definitely room for moderation with that. So
a lot of that comes back to the, at least for me, like the mindset of why I became attracted to something like ultra running in the first place. It's just the extreme. That's what I've noticed about myself is everything is extreme. I don't do anything like in the middle. So that's what I'm trying to find, like, what is that middle ground? Cause I've never seen it before. I'm either like resting or I'm doing 100 mile weeks. You know what I mean? There's no in between.
I am aware of this, having coached you. I'm really aware of this. Like, I have an idea. Okay. Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that I've talked to, especially on the podcast, where it's like, there's something about ultra running specifically where there's a lot of people that have that same thing.
I mean, obviously it takes that some degree of that to do the sport.
Yeah,
it really does. We all have that to some degree. Yeah, I mean, it does. We're not the best with balance, or we wouldn't be drawn to this sport, of course. But you don't have to let it I don't know.
I found, I know that you had mentioned that you're going to really like, you're not going to pace. You're not going to specifically go after races right now. You're taking like a break, even though you're not taking a break, you're still working on things on the side. Mm-hmm. For me, I found that when I stopped racing and started applying that to pacing, that was like a real helpful mm-hmm. way for me to stay in the sport, but like not have all the pressure of being the one to race.
Yeah.
But this goes back to having this overwhelming need to then put my focus on other people. And that's the same thing. So like I found after doing, like, as much as I enjoyed that, and it's an amazing feeling to be there to help someone else reach their goals, what am I doing for myself? Mm. And that's like what I'm finally starting to figure out. Like, it's okay to run sometimes and lift sometimes. And
oh, that's interesting. So you were using pacing as a band-aid?
Exactly. At least that's what it seems like in my self-diagnosis.
I can see that. I'm reflecting on some things, some mutual history here. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I think for me, that's sort of where I'm at with running right now. We're really stripped down. This is actually similar to how I felt after my dad died, which really shook me to my core because he was the foundation of with running. I mean, obviously it shook me to my core because of my dad, but like I didn't expect it to impact running as much as it did. And I felt like mentally I had to really rebuild from the ground up after that. So this is akin to that, just being patient with myself and really, I don't know, sitting here with this stripped down version and being okay with what's here and rebuilding around this version. And it's okay.
It's interesting me too. And talking to you right before our last episode, you were a day out from your race, and the level of stress, even just talking to you in person, right in front of you, that you had then compared to now, like you seem way more,
it was a stressful.
But like we talk about how much we need this, and when it goes away, we struggle to find our identity. But right now you seem like, you know, that you're in a good place, and like you seem like less stressed about it. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, I was very worried about Black Canyon because there were so many unknowns, and I felt like my health was like, my fitness was there, but the health was a big unknown. I told Melissa Ruse earlier that week, a couple of days before I saw you, that I still knew my system wasn't thermoregulating fast enough. I had crew and pacers coming in from out of state, not my usual training partners and stuff. So it was pretty stressful.
You seem like you're in a good place now.
Yeah. But I want to like temper that with saying it wasn't, that's not my typical relationship with racing. And I'm sad that I let myself do a race in those conditions at all. I would have never let any of my athletes do either of those races I did. And I understand I was chasing that stupid goal, but it was so dumb. And that amount of stress wasn't necessary for me just to chase a qualifier.
But as you say, here now, you realize that like,
yep, mistakes were made.
Yeah. You live and learn.
I don't know. I did think I was going to be okay out there. Oh man, that mud was nuts though.
That was a weird fucking like lead up to a race though too, with all the weather.
Everything was weird about that. But it ended up being a fast year. Like course records fell, and I don't think the DNF rate was significantly higher than normal. So
that's what I was thinking about Crown King too. Like same thing. Course records fell. It seemed to be
Crown King was a great year, actually.
Good day. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good year. So what made you decide not to do that?
I just got a brand new puppy. So.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, was my training where I would like it? No, but I was still in the mindset of going out and just mm-hmm. getting it done. Mm-hmm. But I had talked to, someone recently after the race, and they said, it was their first time doing Crown King, and they were like, yeah, it was pretty flat for like the first half. Like it wasn't, they were expecting it to be a lot more vert. And then they got to the halfway point, and then the entire second half of the race was like all uphill. Mm-hmm. And so I thought retrospectively, for me, it's probably a good idea knowing that now, because I would have gone in and been like, man, this is way flatter than I thought it was going to be. And I would have gone out way too
classic
hot.
Chris.
Classic Chris. Yeah. And then second half, it would have been just fucking nightmare.
You've been hating life.
Yeah.
I knew this was going to hit.
Yeah,
it was probably good you didn't do it then, because it would have been bad for your relationship with running, which is kind of what I'm sitting here reflecting back on Black Canyon, saying that was bad for my relationship with running. Yeah. I wish it hadn't been like that.
Yeah. But racing for me, I think if something pops up and I'm like, yeah, I have a free weekend and I have, you know, I'm not with the kids or I have someone to watch the dog or whatever, you know, all the other life shit gets figured out. Maybe I'll hop into something.
Yeah. We talk about a lot on here, like, or we have about what is your why. So right now you don't have a why to race.
No.
Yeah. So I'm not sure I do either at this moment. There are most of why I did racing was so that I could see places on foot that were difficult for me to get to on my own.
Yeah.
To experience that course, that location on foot for the visual payoff, the experience of moving my own body there. So I don't know. Like, I think I'm with you right at this exact moment. I don't even have a why to race because it's just so far out of reach.
But I think my why
and pacing, I really want to get back to those.
I love those things. Yeah. I love those parts about the sport of ultra running. But I think my why originally was more pushing myself to know what my own limits were. And I got to a point where it's like, okay, I'm sure I could push myself more. I'm sure I have a higher ceiling, but like I'm comfortable with this right now. And like maybe there's other things in life that are pushing me enough. Like,
so you've accepted that this limit for this thing
for this
is
time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think
there's no reason for me to go out and maybe that was an unhealthy way for me to have that relationship, was like using it to test my limits. Where
maybe I think that sometimes things like that fill a need at a time, and when we look back at them later, it's easy to be critical of it, but it was filling a need that you needed to get by, to be more present in other aspects of your life. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, I try not to be too self-critical. Anyone who's committed seriously to a hobby can look back and say, I was overcommitted. Any passionate hobby, not just running, not just ultra running. But in the moment, it's not always a bad thing to be zealous about something. I'm not saying that either. And I'm not saying that all the people who are committed to it have a problem or they're overly committed or that either of us even regret that time. It's just different times of life.
I have so many, we're talking about like our legs got chopped off and we're never running again, but I have so many memories of like crazy things that I would do when I was like during COVID, when I ran a 50K around my neighborhood. Like that just came up in conversation the other day.
I was just thinking about when you did the 100 miles. Was that during
COVID?
For
the Aravaipa thing.
Yeah, that was during COVID too.
That was during COVID too. And COVID.
100 miles in a week or in 10 days.
Had like different trails.
You did all of the regional park race courses.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
That was
super fun.
Well,
it was fun to be on the planning end of it. I didn't have to run it. So.
Yeah, but like stuff like that. And I feel like COVID brought out a lot of cool things like that too, where people had to shift gear and what they were
with
planning.
No racing. I spent that whole year as a coach coming up with creative solutions to keep people's not motivated, but to keep their training disciplined, because most of us have to have a carrot to work towards to keep the training lined up. We're not completely robotic. So that'll be interesting for me, because I was saying I wanted to hit this plateauing will be hard.
It will be
hard to hold myself back for months. I think will be hard.
But maybe that's what your goal, that is your goal.
I mean, it is my goal. Yeah. It is what I definitely think I need to do, but I think it will be very hard. Maybe for the first time in a decade, I'll feel like running faster. That would be amazing. Maybe I'll plateau and like get some speed. I don't see that happening.
That's all right. You never know.
But, you know. Who knows?
Stick to the goal of slowing down, which is what your goal is, your plan, and then see what comes out of it.
Yeah.
I think it's important for, and maybe this is our parting words, but I think it's important for all of us to have some sort of goal, even if it's like, there's no goal that's too small or goal that's too big, or, I mean, just to have something to work towards. And if you have a goal and something happens, life happens, whatever, have a new goal, set a new goal and like work towards that.
It's pretty wise, Chris.
I am wise in my old age.
You are so much younger than me. But okay, we can close out on that note.
Yeah, for sure.
Wise thoughts.
It was good to catch up. Our old age. Thanks for listening to another episode of We Run the Desert podcast.